Ja, da ønsker jeg hjertelig velkommen til NUG sitt månedlige medlemsmøte. Klart at så mange fant veien hit. Neste måned skal vi ha årsmøte, 13. mars. Det blir antagelig her det også. Og de som har lyst til å finne ut mer om NUG og ikke medlemmer, de kan takke meg skal jeg sørge for at de får mer informasjon. Det er bare glemt informasjonsbrosjøren jeg skulle hatt med meg. Jeg blir å sende rundt en lista for å få notert hvem som har vært her, og hvor mange som har vært her, og hvem som har NUG-medlem og den type ting, så vi holder litt redde på hvordan utviklingen går når det gjelder medlemsmøtene våre. Fra og med april, tror jeg det, så blir møtene å flytte, fordi høgskolen har flyttet ut herifra og over til bilstedet en plass. Vi kommer tilbake med mer info så snart vi vet noe, men vi skal prøve å beholde kontakt med høgskolen og prøve om vi flytter etter, vi aner ikke hva vi går til.
Så måtte det bygge ny?
Vet ikke.
Nei, men det er svært oppe i Hilsenhedet et annet sted.
Ja, gamle ensidige bygget. Holdbergsplass.
Ja, det er jo noen tøft her.
Ja.
Så super.
Ellers så... NUG har invitert til en fellestur til Linux-forum i Danmark i begynnelsen av mars. Jeg har lyst til å være med, så det er bare å klikke på websiden til NUG, så finner dere mer informasjon om det. Jeg regner med å dra med oss en gjeng som blant annet står bak initiativet om kompetansesenter for fri programvare. Og vi begynner å finne gode folk som drar det over. Ja. Nå kom NUG. I dag har vi vært så heldige å få en... Programvare utviklet til å komme og fortelle om et system de har tatt i bruk blant annet på Høgskolen i Oslo. Det er utviklet på Høgskolen i Oslo for å automatisk lage virtuelle maskiner som blant annet bruker i undervisningen. Vi har jo hatt et virtuelt maskinforedrag mange måneder siden i november om scenekluster, så dette blir en ny episode i den serien da. Vi har jo tidligere også hatt VMW for godt over et år siden. Så, vi er virtuelle maskiner for å være inn i tiden, og jeg er veldig glad for å få høre om hvordan Managed Large Network produktet kalles, fra han som har hovedansvaret for utviklingen, Kyrre Begnum. Vær så god.
Takk skal du ha. Okay, I will try to do this in English, okay? But you can ask questions in Norwegian if you want to. I'll still try to answer in English as best as I can. So this talk is called Managed Large Networks or Virtual Machines. I'm very glad to be actually able to have this talk somewhat after Espen and Per from Limpo had their talk about Zen. So this is a nice continuation of their talk. I think they did a very good job in demonstrating Zen as a virtual machine and its capabilities, especially live migration, which was very interesting. So I'm going to pick up on that. I don't really have to show you this slide, but I'll do it anyway. This is Google Trends, right? So this shows the search keywords and the popularity on search keywords. Now the top one here is virtualization and the bottom one is Zen. So you can see here that from 2004, virtualization and also Zen has become very, very popular today, and there's always one or two virtualization articles out there. Someone has some opinions or a new technology about virtualization. So being part of this is very cool. So and where do I fit in? Well, back in 2003, that's not even on the charts. Back in 2003, by the end, I was participating in a conference, the LISA conference in San Diego, and we were a couple of lecturers who were educating people in system administration. And the idea that was proposed was, how about virtualization? Could we use virtual machines in our education, in our system and network administration education, in the courses? And I guess we could. So we went back, everyone, to our university, and we started experimenting with it. And here at the University College, we ended up with a tool called MLN, which this talk is about, obviously. And together with John Sechrest from Oregon State University, we also worked further investigating the tool also in services and automatic deployments and artificial intelligence and so on. So we have done a little bit of different research on virtualization. So this is where it started, really. And to give you an insight into my perspective of things, this is me, okay? So I have one machine in my office, and they ask, virtualization, can we use that for something? And I start playing around with user mode Linux at that time, and I start creating a couple of virtual machines on top of it, and I think, oh, this could be fun. I can use this, definitely. I need, but in order for it to be useful in the course I'm teaching, I need a little bit more than just a couple of small virtual machines that I create manually, because I don't have a lot of time. So what I need is actually this, okay? So I need more complex setups, and I need to reproduce them at each course. So we teach a firewall course, and we use setup like this. So these are virtual machines, obviously, and here you have network switches, and I want this setup to work pretty much out of the box for me in order to use that. But I want different kinds of setups, so there's a certain complexity. And we use that for the courses, and it turns out to be quite beneficial for us, and we want to keep on using it. So my situation today, it's more like this. Okay, so now we have a couple of servers downstairs in the basement, and now they want to have this on top of it, and I'm the one who's going to realize it. Okay, so this is my problem at the moment. So we don't want to spend more time on this. We just want to say, okay, we need all the gray ones for a couple of weeks, but then we need the purple ones afterwards. Now, the purple and the gray ones, they can run at the same time, but the green ones, they need the space of their own, so then we need to take all these purple ones down. So you can imagine this is the situation that I'm dealing with, and all of this with virtualization and servers, and the same amount of time that I had initially. So to formulate the problem is, how do I deal with the complexity of all of these virtualized scenarios that I'm going to build? That is my problem. And I formulate a couple of goals that I think I should try to achieve in order to cope with this problem. And the first is, I need to describe efficiently what I'm interested in doing, but also in a generalized and expandable manner so that it works for future courses and future cases. And I need also to go from this description to the working result rather quickly. And with quickly, I don't necessarily mean time. I mean the necessary steps involved in achieving the scenario from my description. And then at the end, I also need to manage it, meaning that my management commands should affect the scenarios as an atomic unit. Just as I said earlier, like all the purple ones. I don't want to go purple 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, reboot, and I forget purple 6, and that one hangs around forever. So I don't want that to happen. I want to keep talking about the whole thing as an atomic unit. And this is then my approach. With MLN, which surprisingly stands for Manage Large Networks, we made a design where we talk about a bunch of virtual machines as a project. So all the purple ones would be one project, for instance, okay? And projects can be spread about several physical servers, but still I want to talk about them as just that project, and I want to talk with every server directly. Also, I want to have the file system copied using more the cloning technique than the usual how you install a virtual machine technique. For those of you who have used, let's say, VMware or more graphical tools, you know that you create a virtual machine by creating this empty vessel, and then you boot it up with a CD image and you install it manually. That's very nice, but that scales very badly for, let's say, 50 virtual machines that you need up within an hour. So, obviously, we use the cloning approach. I think VMware uses the term virtual appliances for this, and I think also Monica Lam in her research uses the same term. So a virtual appliance is simply a file system, already installed file system, with perhaps a lot of add-on software that you would like to have on that file system. We call this a template. This is a template virtual machine. We support Xen and user mode Linux. I'm going to talk mostly about Xen today, but we started out with user mode Linux. So now we support both, so you can interchange that quite easily. And the architecture is expandable, meaning you don't only have to do the things that I programmed, you can add stuff easily. At least that's the idea. You should be able to add stuff easily to MLN if you want to. And it's written in Perl. Most of you people probably know Perl, and I usually test it on Ubuntu Linux. In contrast to a graphical tool, I use a declarative language. This is more how I like it because I have a computer science background and I like to program things. So my natural choice was to define a declarative language. You can see the language here. It is simply blocks, curly braced blocks. Here's one virtual machine. And up here in the global block, I simply say the name of the project. So this would be only one project with one virtual machine on it. You can see it runs Xen. Its file system is supposed to be stored in logical volume management. It's supposed to have this amount of memory. And this is the template I'm supposed to use, the Ubuntu server template, which I've made already. This is the size, so I stretch it out to 2 GB size. And I add the name server, I add a network interface with the configuration, and I also add a user with then this accompanying password. This is the encrypted version of the password. So not only do I describe the hardware configuration of the machine, I also specify internal configuration of the virtual machine. So once it runs, it is supposed to actually have the user with the password on it already. I don't want to think more about it after this. This looks very much like any other configuration file. For those of you who have played around with Xen and written those Xen configuration files, this is not very different, except that Xen doesn't really address the internal behavior of the file system. But that's all well. However, if I want to create 50 virtual machines like this, I'll end up writing a lot of code, and I don't want to do that because I'll probably write some errors in it. So I also have I also have the superclass concept. Here you can see a project consisting of 3 virtual machines, but they're all very small, declarative-wise. Here, 1, 2, and 3, but they all inherit what I defined in the superclass. For those of you familiar with programming, this is simply inheritance, and it's no surprise. So you can specify everything you want to hear, and you inherit it automatically, and you can also override locally if you want to. This alone enables me to specify large projects but still keep the configuration rather consistent on each virtual machine, which is very important to me. This project builds on one physical machine. If you would like to specify a project that is distributed across several physical machines, you need to assign each virtual machine a service host, meaning this is the server you're supposed to run on. And MLN, once you build the project, will then contact the other machine and say, hey, you're part of this, and this is the project, so could you please just build your part? And that is the MLN daemon that takes care of this. But still, once the project is built, you still use the project as one unit. I should rather show you this. So this is a demo, and I just create a simple network like this. It's called LisaNet, and it's just 2 virtual machines. They're connected to a switch, and they have internal network configuration, and this virtual machine here also has an outside network interface with a static IP address. I define everything on this machine, however it's supposed to build and run on this machine. That is simply the case. Okay. Can you read this? Yeah? Okay. So everything is written down in an MLN file, as you can see here. It's called lisanet.mln. The most important thing is that I define a variable, which the language also supports, which is the host name on which the service is supposed to run. There you can see the service host where I used a variable. This is the superclass, and I define everything which is common inside the superclass. Here also I add a user with the password. I forgot it. Here's the first host, host one, you can see the two outside, the two network interfaces with the outside address, and the other host, which is rather small, and also the switch, which the two are connected to, the one that you have in common, simply called long. So the first thing I do is I do MLM build, and I supply the file name of the MLM file, and what happens is it sends the project over to the machine that is involved, in this case MLN1, and now we just have to wait for MLN to do their part and report back. So this is going to hang for about a minute, and while this is hanging, okay, I'm trying to time this, okay? It's hard to figure out something that takes exactly 1 minute to tell you, but you will you'll probably think about the templates about now. So if you run, let's say, servers with Ubuntu, you can run templates from any distribution. If you would experiment with Xen, let's say SUSE, they would assume something that you want to have several SUSE machines on the same server that you have. Now you can download different kinds of templates from the SourceForge site, but they're usually based on Debian or Ubuntu. However, we have used a lot of Red Hat, some BusyBox templates if you need very, very small virtual machines, but that's basically it. The size of the template varies a lot. A basic Ubuntu install is perhaps just 200 megabytes of size, but if you do the desktop install, you will end up with a template of perhaps 1.3 gigabytes. Oh, it's done, okay. So, next we start the project. Notice that I only address the project by name from now on. I don't regard the file, and I don't regard where it's actually placed. And I've got the report back from MLN1 that it has started all the virtual machines and the switch. I can use the status command to just see the status of the virtual machines in that project, and now I simply connect onto the virtual machine. And inside of the virtual machine, you can see that I'm running Xen at the moment. This is Xen 0.303, I think. This is the size of the file system, and I record just a little message into a file, which we will review later on. And also, I guess I should ping at this point. Yes, I'm pinging the other host, which has the 002, just to show you that everything came up. From the administration perspective, I can also run a different status command, something that is more concerns the physical server than the actual project. So that is the daemon status. And if it's written just like I did over there, you will get a lot of output. Basically the XM list of every of your servers, for those of you familiar. So it will produce more output than you probably want to at that point. So what you do instead is that you supply some grouping mechanism. Let's say all of the hardware virtualization servers, and only give me the summary like this. So you can see here the number of projects, virtual machines, and the memory consumption on each server that you use. Okay, let's continue.
Did we ask questions now?
Yes, please.
The switches, are there physical switches? Do you have virtual LANs?
So the question was, what about those switches? What do they look like? It depends on the virtualization technology that you use. If you would use them with Linux, they would spawn something that they call a UML switch, which is simply a process which emulates a switch. In the case of Xen, you create bridge interfaces on the host, and you connect all the virtual machines onto those bridge interfaces. So you don't need extra physical switches in order to create this. Now, you can define network interfaces, as I showed you, the disk size, so it will just stretch it onto the desired size, users and groups, and you can assign users to groups, and you can copy files into the virtual machine at build time, you can mount extra partitions, and you can also add startup commands. This is convenient for most people, however, a lot of you people will have special needs. You will have, I would like to specify, let's say, Apache configurations also. That would be really good for me. Or MySQL configurations also. Can MLN do that? Can MLN do this? So my solution to this after a while was to add a plugin interface. The main motivation of the plugin is that you can write very little code that simply adds the features to MLN, and you have to write them in Perl. Here you can see that I simply add the block called Apache, and I just add a couple of lines here, and I add another one inside the actual virtual machine. This is the superclass, right? So I also add a little bit. And inside, and once you then write the plugin, you don't have to write any parsing code for this. You can just inside the plugin say, okay, just give me everything that this host has on the Apache block. And if it has something, you'll get it back. And you will get then the merged result from all of the inherited superclasses. So you don't have to think about all of that. And then you can just open the Apache conf file, and then you edit it as you feel fit. And that is the way you can add plugins easily that also adds on the virtual machine. So if you have a special software that you would like to configure with MLN, this would be the way that I would recommend you to do it. However, you might also want to configure the project itself and not only the virtual machine's file system. And that would look something like this. This is a very interesting example, okay? It looks a little bit daunting at first, but let's just take a look at the... First of all, there's no virtual machine here, as you probably recognized. It's only a large global block and a superclass. This is supposed to be one file. And the most important thing here is the out to enum block, which these three important lines. First of all, superclass cluster node numhost 36, and then I also include a file which is called service.txt. What this means is more or less the same as a for loop. It says, I want to have 36 virtual machines. They're all supposed to inherit from this superclass, and you spread them across this list of physical server that I have. So now I don't have to keep track of the physical servers. I just have them in the list, and I let this plugin at parse time expand the project with the set of virtual machines that I want, and then they will be built. And notice also this, that this is, I think, 30 lines of code, I think, and the number of virtual machines you can build with this is arbitrary. I just have to increase this number. Oh no, I want 150 virtual machines, so the complexity would still be the same. And this plugin will then assign every virtual machine an IP address from this particular beginning, and so on and so forth. So why would anyone be interested in a plugin like this? Well, consider the following case. I have 24 servers, right? They are my grid somehow. And I want to deploy a cluster of virtual machines on top of that. So using the AutoEnum plugin, I don't have to assign each machine to everyone. Using this simple file, I can create a cluster like this. Okay, everyone gets one virtual machine. And I want that to happen now. LF, please.
Yes, are these machines all running on one machine, or can they... We run many machines running MLN.
Yes, so in this example, each physical machine will get one virtual machine each. So was that your question?
These are all physical machines?
Yes, so the white ones are physical machines, server, and the little spheres are virtual machine. Lacking a better terminology, yes. Cubes and squares. Spheres. Okay, you can also do this, right? You can also deploy more clusters on the same fabric, and you can make decisions. So, okay, all the green ones are going to run this afternoon, and the blue ones, they will be taken up afterward because that's my beta cluster. I'm just playing around with that, and I'll take that down later. So you can use the fabric more flexibly by deploying several types of clusters on top of it, using, for instance, the AutoEnum plugin, which makes it very easy. You probably ask, so how long would it take us to build a cluster like this? Actually, say the green one here, that takes 8 minutes to build. because everything is built in parallel, right? Everyone just builds one machine, so the time it takes to build the entire project is simply the time of the weakest link. So within 8 minutes we have this, and within 16 minutes we would then have this. Whether or not it is a good idea to run both clusters at the same time depends on your hardware. If you have dual core machines or dual CPU machines, this is actually quite okay. Except for the network bandwidth, of course, which they will have to share. Once you've created those virtual machines, and probably a lot of you people who have already used virtualization a lot will know this, that you don't really make the very best decisions once you design the whole thing to begin with. Usually after a while, you figure out that, oh, I guess we should have a little bit more memory, or perhaps more disk space, that's very probable, or I need another virtual machine among the purple ones. So you need a way to maintain and adjust the project in time. With MLN, you can use the upgrade feature for that. You simply write a new version of your project file, and you say MLN upgrade on it, and MLN will then try to create a diff of the old project and the new ones, and it will only make the adjustments on the virtual machines which are affected. I guess you can basically change everything you would like in the project, but the most interesting thing is, of course, if you then would change the service host, meaning where the virtual machine runs, that would actually be the same as migrating the virtual machine to somewhere else. So I will show you a case of where we'd like to do that. So now I have two servers, okay, and I want to move the entire project over to the other server, like this. So here we are. You can see the number of virtual machines and the number of projects. And I have a new version of that file. It's simply called lisanet2.mln. And the only thing I've changed is this simple variable, which will now point to mln2 instead of mln1. That's the only thing I've changed. But the effect will be that the entire project will run somewhere else all of a sudden. I stopped the project, and this little extra option, -wi, means don't return until all of the virtual machines are down. You could perhaps attempt to upgrade with the project running, and MLN will then attempt to only take down the machines which are really affected. But I'll do it this way. The next thing I do is I say MLN upgrade, I supply the new version of the configuration file. MLN will then prompt me and give me the diff, and you can see that only the service host here is the actual diff. And it asks me whether or not I would like to continue, which I want to. So, now it sends a project to the two servers. To MLN1, it says, look, MLN2 is going to ask you for a couple of virtual machines, so you're going to let them, okay? And to MLN2, you're going to fetch the virtual machines from MLN1 and install them. So MLN1 is already done with their part, and in the background now, those two are simply copying over the file system. At this point, you're probably asking, so what about live migration? Wasn't that such a cool thing? And yes, it is. Is it implemented in MLN yet? No, it's not. However, we look forward to doing so very soon. You can ask me a more direct question later, but the problem is, basically, you need the infrastructure for the live migration, okay? You need the common storage. Now, Espen and Per from Limpro's approach with the shared FireWire disk, that was very cool. However, we don't even have the FireWire disk. So, no, we cannot do the live migration. As soon as we have the facilities, it will be added, be sure. But there is a thing to be said about this lazy or cold kind of migration, because you can change a lot of things in the process. I can go from my laptop, not that one obviously, from my laptop, I can go from user mode Linux virtual machine, and I can migrate them over to the Big Iron server, and in the process it turns into a Zen machine with twice the amount of memory. So in not all the cases you need the live migration. Sometimes you want to move it to a greater distance, so live migration you can only do within the same subnet. However, with this type of migration you could move it to anywhere, as long as the servers are able to talk with each other. So there are a couple of nice features. You can then test and then move it over to the production environment, for instance. again, this doesn't take exactly 1 minute to explain to you, but I'm sure it's done any second now. The file system which are copied over are actually compressed during the copy. So even if you have a lot of available space on the file system, it doesn't copy all of the available space also. So it should go rather quickly. This little demo here should take around 1 minute and 20 seconds. There we are, we're done. Okay, I've now moved over the project. I only upgraded it, but in effect it has been moved over. So I started the same way I started it before. I don't really care that it has moved. I just say the LisaNet project just to start it. And you can see here, now I get the message back from MLAN 2 instead of MLAN 1 in the previous example. And you can also see that the status command gives me that both virtual machines are up. So what I want to do now is I log on to the virtual machine again. It has the same IP address as before. Lisa06, I think, was the password. So here you can see that the message file, it is the same. So yes, I copied the virtual machine actually over, and you can see that the switch and the other virtual machine also came over. So the entire project has actually been copied, which is very convenient. And then I do the same command I did by the end of the previous demo, and now you should see that the number of virtual machines and the number of projects has changed just a little bit, for those of you who are very good at remembering numbers. Any questions so far? Aleph?
Yeah, so what happened behind the scenes when you were migrating the virtual machines or copy of the images?
Yes.
With the compression?
Yes, I copy the images with compression.
Was it like a command, like just a SCP or something?
No, I just do it over the sockets, okay, which I have. So yeah, over the same connection, basically. Yes.
Could you use it to build a more complex network to routes and gateways?
Oh yes.
So you could include routes and use some of the virtual machines for as gateways, some of the small things like that.
Yes, you mean as routers, right?
Yes.
Yeah, well, if the routers are also virtual machines, then yes, you can do that. You can design any topology that you would be interested in. Let's say a ring topology, or a DMZ with several subnets in it, or a larger three. Yes, you can design any of it. However, there is a certain limitation in the virtualization technology again. And I assume Zen has a limit of 3 network interfaces per virtual machine. Yes, so that is certainly a limitation on that case. Sometimes you would be interested in building very complex routers with a lot of networks attached to it. In our course where we teach routing tables and so on, that would be particularly interesting. Okay, so I... Let me just summarize the steps of operation here in order for someone who would like to use MLN. There's the investment phase where you create a template or you download the template from somewhere else or you create it yourself. And if you have special software needs, you write the plugin for it, which should be relatively simple. Now, then for each project instance, you then build, or first you write the file, and then you build it and you start it. Those are the only steps involved for all of the instances of the different projects that you are interested in. Let me show you how this works in a particular case, where we want to have a lot of projects which look almost identical. We run a operating system course. This is a beginner's operating system course here at the college for bachelor students. And it is our desire to be able to show them both Windows and Linux interacting in a network. The hardware virtualization brought to us through Zen has just become available enough for us to do this. So we have a project that looks like this. They have a Windows virtual machine connected to a switch, connected to a Linux virtual machine, which has the outside interface additionally. And that is, every student group is supposed to have this. So what we do next is we buy a couple of machines. These are off-the-shelf servers using the IM2 CPU socket, which has the virtualization support. And we fill them up with the maximum amount of memory that we can. I think these have 8 GB of memory each. And then we simply create a lot of those projects on top of it, like that. And then we just need to keep track of the project and the group. Each student group of 2 students gets one of those projects. And they can play around with it as much as they want. And if they destroy anything or corrupt the file system or remove any files, we just build the new ones in a couple of minutes for them. It's very fun. Now the access to these machines, of course you cannot have Secure Shell and so on into Windows, at least not out of the box. So they are configured to actually be available for the student through VNC. So the student can be at home or in the terminal room and they connect using VNC to the virtual machines. Zen provides us with VNC for every hardware virtualized machine. So the Windows virtualized machine is hardware virtualized, however the Linux virtual machine is parallelized. So that's a parallel virtual machine. Now we experimented with Linux being hardware virtualized, so for the Zen geeks of you guys, however, not very happy. Perhaps we did something wrong, that might be, but we ran out of time, so Linux is para-virtualized, Windows is hardware virtualized. However, they can talk to each other through the bridges, through the switches, so it's not really a problem. How we organize this in terms of the MLN configuration files is this. Each group has a tiny MLN file, which is only a couple of lines, and in the end we include the rest of the MLN specification from another file, which simply states 2 virtual machines and so on and so forth. So in order to create one group, I just have to make a new copy of this file, new group number, give them a password, and then I can build it, and it will look exactly as the other project. Another good thing is, if I'm not really satisfied with the setup, I just have to add things here, and I can upgrade all of the projects, and they will still remain similar. So if I figure out the Windows machines should have more memory, then I added this here, and then I upgrade all of the projects. So that works out very well. In this case, we have 30 different groups, which means 60 virtual machines across 3 different servers. So you can imagine it's a lot to keep track of once this is running. Okay, I'm going to summarize what I've been talking about. My goals initially were to describe the scenario efficiently. So I did this using the superclass feature and the plugins. And I wanted to be able to go from the description to the working system quickly. And you can see this using the template and the distributed building. I only have to issue the command once and it happens across all of the machines. That is what I would define as quickly. And then the manage the scenario as an atomic unit thing, that was achieved using the project concept. Just a couple of last thoughts. We have been running virtual machines for a while now, and we figure out that in a production environment, we need more than just be able to deploy it rather quickly. We have some other goals, and we are working on that at the moment. First of all, there's the design of your infrastructure, meaning not only how you want your virtual machines to look like, which MLN covers pretty good by now, but how would you like your servers to look like? How much performance would you need on that? Right now, a design for your virtual infrastructure is buy the biggest machine you can afford and get as much memory as you can on it. That is the design at the moment for your hardware. So could we nuance this a little bit? Also, there's the cost to it. So we haven't been able to afford common network storage for our lab downstairs. well, we could probably afford a FireWire disk, I guess. But somehow we didn't know how much we would like to buy. Also, if you're interested in this live migration thing and you only want one virtual machine, you have to think about it. You have to end up buying two servers which are identical and a common storage just to run one virtual machine, right? So there's a lot of hardware which remains utterly ineffective for a long time. If you have more virtual machine, that makes the whole thing different. There's this concept of availability, which Espen and Per addressed very good the last time. They incorporated Zen with Heartbeat, so if you issue a shutdown command to a physical machine, it removes all of the virtual machines over to different hosts, which was very impressive. You also have the monitoring concept, which says how well do your virtual machines perform. And perhaps there should be some sort of classification saying, oh, you shouldn't put two database virtual machines on the same server because they will not mix well. So you should move that one over here. And this virtual machine mixes very well with database virtual machine. So yeah, that works out well. So are we able to define policies like this, which makes your physical infrastructure work the best way possible? And we need monitoring in order for this to work out. And Ingo, which is sitting way back over there, he is actually working on those problems in his master thesis at the moment. So we are continuously looking into this, and it's very exciting. So here are the future goals. We want to incorporate more policy into MLN. Once the stuff is working, how do we treat it further on, and so on. Also, VM performance monitoring, and I don't know if you noticed, KVM suddenly popped up in Linux 2.6.20, so that might be interesting technology to add into MLN. The same with VMware. Would it be possible for MLN to be able to build VMware virtual machines and manage those using our approach? That would be very interesting. And of course, live migration in Zen is definitely something that we will focus on. Okay, thank you very much. If you have any questions, Norwegian or any other language you think I understand, I'll be happy to try and answer them. Hello.
Can you say something about the difference between using user mode Linux and Zen? Maybe something, is the performance better with IO or is
okay.
There any other things?
Thank you, Elif. Very good question. So the question is, can I say anything about the performance differences or differences in general between user mode Linux and Zen? So user mode Linux has a completely different approach than Zen. First of all, in order to install Zen, you need to change the kernel on your system, which is not easy for everyone. Although it gets easier as distribution add more Zen support out of the box. So once you install Zen, you will have a very underlying thin layer called the hypervisor, which then will take care of a lot of the, interrupt processing and so on from the virtual machine. And that will make the virtual machines go impressively fast. In user mode Linux, on the other hand, a virtual machine is a process like any other. It's a process, it attaches itself to a file system image, and you pass along a lot of arguments, the memory, the network cards, and so on, once you just issue the command. So it will behave completely different and have all of the drawbacks performance-wise as a regular process will have. It will be scheduled like any other process. The upside with user mode Linux is you don't need to change the kernel, you don't have to be root on your system in order to actually run a user mode Linux instance which is also connected to the internet. So even if you just have an account somewhere, you can, through MLN for instance, or just by yourself, just make the user mode Linux machine pop up and you can use it for your purpose. That will perhaps be a very better approach if you only need to fool around with some software and you don't need everything to go blazingly fast. So that is the upside with user mode Linux. The downside with user mode Linux, apart from the performance thing, is it's hard to get to work. That is just my personal experience. It is hard to compile and to make it work on all distributions. There is no certain package that you can install for usable Linux also. So if you compile it to run a 32-bit system, it won't necessarily run on a 64-bit system. It might run on another 32-bit system, but you're not really sure. So there's a lot of those issues. So I guess both Xen and usable Linux have some quirks. If you install MLN, you will install usable Linux automatically. However, you will not install Xen automatically. Any other question? LF.
Do you think that usable Linux might be duplicated in MLN, and then also the new things will happen with Xen?
So the question is, do I think that usable Linux will fade away in MLN? I'm not really sure, because a lot of people, especially in education, use usable Linux. So I think they would appreciate me keeping the support for it. Yeah. Peter.
I've been doing some testing on Xen and running into a few problems with the storage management. Do you have any good tricks to like increase the size of the root partition? Can you do this without rebooting?
I've not experimented with increasing the size of the root partition without rebooting. That I haven't. So I do the once I do the size adjustment of the template for each virtual machine, I use that either through LVM or through DD and some resize. So I do that offline.
Right.
Yes, I have not tried that online. I didn't know it was possible.
Well, I haven't found a way to do it, but I want to, because when you run servers and I do at work, we want to keep them running and be able to increase the volumes.
Oh, it's a very interesting point. Yes, if you figure it out, I would like to have that feature. Yes. Any other questions? Both.
How about security?
Do you mean the security between the virtualization layer and the...
Because you're compiling step into the kernel, right?
Yes. I don't have a very good answer on the security of the given virtualization technology. I guess I'm just applying a little bit of blindness and indifference to it. But there's always discussion on usable Linux and also Xen. But I've heard strong arguments about Xen being virtually impossible. So that means there is a chance, right? But I don't really know. And as far as I've noticed, no student has achieved in hacking through their virtual machine to my system. Yeah. Yes?
What about the daemon you've written in Perl? That's probably secure.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. No, it's the question is, how about the MLN daemon? How about that? No, that is a clear text over the network kind of thing. So you probably want to either tunnel it or have it on your own protected network.
Yeah.
However, I of course played around a little bit when I moved virtual machines from my home over to my desktop and so on in the office. I just assume that no one will understand. But I guess that will be addressed. We have looked into both encrypting the connection. So everything goes through the single connection. So if you would just encrypt that one, then everything would be encrypted so far. You have authentication based on IP addresses only.
Okay.
Yes. Once you would have more user support in Xen, you could also have user authentication through the different MLN daemons, I assume.
Mm.
Yes, question.
Hvis du ønsker aksess, det et annet utstrekk sikkerhetsspørsmål. Hvis du ønsker aksesskontroll, det at du kan som individuell brammer eller IP-adress for eksempel, eller webblad på Windows, kan du bygge det I MLN?
So the question was, if I want additional, let's say, security network access or firewall control, how do I use that in MLN? So if you run virtual machines, you can protect them through two ways. If you run Linux virtual machines, you either protect the server, and you make sure that the server, which all the traffic passes through in any case, you make sure that the server has some firewalling which will block on the behalf of the virtual machines. Or you make each virtual machine block their traffic on their own. You can do either, actually. However, if you use it on the physical machine, that will of course override whatever the virtual machine doesn't have any effect then. But you would then enable the firewall on Windows, for instance. I don't know exactly how you do that through MLN because I don't know how to hack Windows. But if someone would show me, if I just have to edit a file or something, then yes, that would be relatively easy. If I would have to hack the registry, I'm not sure. I'll definitely try. Okay, any other questions? Yes?
Can you use MLN to deploy Windows at all? I saw you had the example from the school where you had Windows.
Yes, we use MLN to deploy Windows. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we have, the project says, I want one Linux machine and I want one Windows machine. In fact, I only make the distinction in the template. I just say this is a Windows template and that's it. Yes.
Okay, so you have just the Windows image. Can you do anything else to the Windows image, like install software or?
Actually, we wanted to, but we ran out of time. We at least wanted to add network configurations and user configuration. And I know that you can do that from a command line inside Windows. So our initial idea was to simply write a plugin that will then write a batch file, which would then run first time the virtual machine boots. So that will at least give us a workaround towards that. However, we ran out of time and the course started, so we haven't made that yet, but it's definitely possible and we plan that. Yeah. However, installing extra software is more difficult because the virtual machines are configured while they are offline. So I mount up the file system and I can dig around in the file system, but I cannot run things on it. Yeah. Any other questions? No? Okay, thank you very much.
Ja, da det en liten lyg, maskott. Vær så god.